best couldn't hear you one more try than stare him stone cold in the eye. From Studio 65 on the Sens Underground Network, welcome to episode number 11 of the Sens Call-Ups for Wednesday, February 6, 2013. The Senators have a few players out with the flu, and they've stumbled a bit over the past few games. The call-ups aren't immune to this problem either, so we've had to bring in an extra player to fill a hole we have in our lineup. Fortunately, our farm system is as good as the Senators, and we've found a much sought-after top-line center to take our spare mic. He's a familiar voice to the Groundhogs, and we couldn't be happier he's joined us this week. Canuck, good to see you again.
Hey, I'm tired this week. I don't know what's going on. I think I just need to take a day and sleep the entire day. I don't know if it's the weather or what. You getting this at all?
A little bit. You'll have to take a day off between the games. I think the other problem is there are a lot of games going on at the moment. It's a bit tiring to keep up with everything.
And I made the silly decision of eating a Baconator from Wendy's tonight. Six slices of Applewood smoked bacon, and it's just kind of sitting there. And that pillow looks very inviting. I don't know.
You're just getting ready for that podcast about bacon that you're going to do with Sistine. I understand that. Mystery guest, say hello to the Groundhogs.
Hello.
It's Bottle Duck!
Yay.
Thanks for coming along and helping us out, especially on short notice. We certainly appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, guys. Anything for you, you know that.
It'll be an adventure.
So I got this piano that needs to be moved. I was wondering if you could come over and help me with that? Up and down a flight of stairs?
No. Bacon is never a bad choice, by the way. Just in case, just so we're clear.
I think I'm busy that week, Canuck. Sorry, I don't move pianos.
Sense game on.
Exactly.
I have seen way too many Looney Tunes things that went way bad involving pianos. I am not turning into Sylvester the Cat. No, thank you.
Good point. I'm not turning into an Austin Marina or a Morris Marina for anybody who watches Top Gear and pianos. As always, the Sens Underground forums are available at sensunderground.com. They've been getting pretty busy these days, not just with game threads, but with other stuff going on. I hope that everybody signs in, checks them out. You can also send your thoughts to us via email. The email address is podcast@senscallups.com, and you can follow and interact with us on Twitter. We got some game recaps to go through. We've got some comments about what's going on both with the Senators and around the league. Anybody have anything they wanted to get into before we start the game recaps, or can we just get going?
I said, can we skip the first one?
First two.
Well, I think we're going to be pretty quick with the game recaps because some of the games.
No. We can't skip the first two because the second one, I definitely have some rage to vent. I think most every Sens fan that saw it has rage to vent. The first one, I think most of us just want to forget. But
hey. Exactly. The first one's going to be pretty quick because, quite frankly, it was rather boring. It was not an interesting game to watch. There wasn't a lot of flow. There wasn't a whole lot of excitement. There were a few moments, but this will be a quick summary.
All right, game on.
Game on. Game number 8 was the Sens at the Hurricanes. Spezza was out. Latendresse was out. Dogovins was in. Weirkosh was in. Benoit was in. And Borowiecki was scratched. The overall summary, not very exciting, not very interesting, so this will be a fairly quick summary. The first period, well, none of them were particularly interesting. In the first period, the Sens got a power play 13 seconds into the game, and Gonchar had a great chance. There were two chances overall, no goals. That was pretty much the summary of what went on. There were some very strange line combinations through the beginning of this game. I was trying to write them all down, but I just gave up after a while because there were too many weird combinations that were going on. Joe Corvo. Yeah, everybody, all Sens fans remember Joe Corvo. Still a kiss of death for this team. He was a kiss of death when he was here, and it continues now that he's playing for other teams. Colin Greening lost his stick at center ice, and followed by Erik Karlsson falling when he was trying to get caught up with the play. Semin picked up the puck, and he sets up Stahl for the goal. So it was Stahl from Semin and Corvo. That's pretty much the only interesting thing that happened in the first period. The shots were 12 for the Sens and 15 for the Canes. Second period started off with Mark Methot getting a hooking call, but the penalty kill was very good in this. The rest of play went on. It was back and forth, but nothing particularly interesting going on. Chris Neal got caught by a high stick. He doesn't wear a visor, and it caught him underneath his eyebrow and above his eye. It was really close to being very, very serious. 4-minute power play, Turris hit the post. And right at the end of the power play, Erik Karlsson tried a slap shot that didn't work. I believe that's when his stick shattered, and that ended up being a 2-on-1 the other way for Carolina, but Anderson took care of it. No goal. And then later on in the period, Karlsson got a 2-minute elbowing call for checking someone who was basically falling along the boards. They kind of fell into his elbow more than anything, at least from the replay that I was looking at. It was one of those calls where you go, okay, well, there wasn't, you know, his elbow didn't encounter the guy's face, but his face was down around his elbow. It's kind of a strange call.
Pay attention, folks. Pay attention, folks. This will become a trend over the coming days.
Yeah, a little strange. Late in the periods, one of the Stahl brothers gets a penalty for hooking, but again, nothing doing for the Senators as far as scoring on the power play. Shots after two periods, Sens out shooting the Canes 25-24. Third period, Karlsson pulled Ellis off the post at one point, but couldn't quite get the puck home. It was a good try, but it didn't quite work. Regan missed high twice in succession shortly thereafterward. And game just kind of went on from there. No scoring, nothing particularly interesting going on. There was a slew foot on Condra at one point. No call. Nicely done. Way to go, Zebras. Just over 6 minutes left in the game, there was a fantastic effort by Daugavins, Silverberg, and Regan, which was an interesting line combination. Set it all up, and Gonchar had a wicked chance, and he just completely heeled it off his stick. He had lined it up for a one-timer and just heeled it. It was probably the best scoring opportunity that period. Didn't work out. Craig Anderson played very well, as usual. There was no chance for an empty net goal. There was one chance. Well, there wasn't an empty net goal at all, so they lost 1-0, but the Senators just couldn't score. Bottom line. They have a bad record, though, in Carolina. They haven't won in Carolina in a long time.
First game without Jason Spezza. No goals. The other thing, too, is I guess Joe Corvo had not had a point yet this season, and sure enough, he picks up his first assist against the Sens.
Well, he does that on a regular basis against the Senators. He just seems to be able to score against us. I don't know why, but he does.
I don't think that's correct, Canuck. I'm pretty sure Spezza was out for the previous game, too. I'm pretty sure he was out, but we just didn't know what it was, and they were kind of saying it was flu. This was the first game, I think, they knew he was out, and it was serious.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, so that's it. Sens at Canes, boring game, 1-0 loss. Let's move on.
Yeah. Well, the next game, which is game number 9 at Montreal. Let's see. Well, Turris with the assistant captain with the A on his jersey. Subban back in the game. Gonchar out with the flu. Interesting thing about this game, they noted if the playoffs had started that day, these two teams would be playing each other. And make no mistake, the Sens and the Habs are one playoff matchup away from being bitter rivals. I can see it.
Oh, yeah.
So this was, you know, a huge 4-point game. I think the Sens were actually up by 1 point before the game. Oh, Anderson and Price in net, so everybody's fired up for this one. Game gets off, but even before the puck was dropped, the anthem singer screws up on the anthem, singing the French part. And the only thing I could think of, and I don't mean this to be offensive at all, but I'm just kind of thankful that guy wasn't an anglophone singing, because he would have been crucified in the media. Because it's just a political environment there, right? So anyway, get to the game.
He was terrible.
Condra, Turris, and Elfie on the first line. 14 seconds in, we get an interference call against Plekanec. Good, decent power play, a lot of good cat and mouse on it. And then the moment, Weerkotch makes a beauty pass, sends Silverberg up on the breakaway, and ooh-ah! Scores the goal, we're up 1-0. Healy has to eat some crow. It's all great. So, you know, you get a lead and you sit on it, and a couple of seconds later, boom, it's Desjardins scores, and it's back to 1-1. So this becomes a little bit of a problem for the Sens. They like to kind of relax after a goal. So let's maybe chalk it up to early season mistakes. Won't happen
and,
again, right?
What happened?
Anyway.
Yes. And what happened next? And what happened next?
So I must say, you know, early in the first period, I'm already starting to think, Bob Cole, could you just please retire? This guy cannot call the game. And I'm not even talking about the pro Leaf thing. They're getting the names wrong. It's just, he's just, oh, we've beaten this issue to death. Sorry for bringing it up. But he misses stuff. Like there's a big hit and he doesn't even mention anything. And, you know, it's the play's already happened. Like, whoa, that was a dandy shot there. Oh, baby. You know, and just, he can't keep up with the game. Glenn Healy makes the wonderful news about the last time the Sens and Habs plays on a Super Bowl Sunday. It was 4-1 Habs, and the Ravens won the Super Bowl. Thank you, Glenn Healy, because the Ravens won the Super Bowl and the Habs won this game. Nice of you to bring that up. Alfie penalty comes up. Both power plays, I thought, looked good for Montreal and Senators. Turris, there's some questionable interference penalties again. This is going to come up a lot. I'm not getting these interference calls by the refs at all. But, you know, all in all, the first period, good pressure both ends of the ice. Interesting little thing right at the end. Did you see that shot of Chris Neal? He was sitting on the bench, and he was just absolutely chirping. I don't know who he's chirping at. It was the ref or one of the players. And McLean actually came over and put his hands on his shoulder and told him to calm down.
Yeah, easy there, buddy. Yeah. I think he started chirping at one. I think he started with one of the Montreal players because I think they'd actually had some contact as he was heading off. And I think he started chirping at one of the Montreal players, but then it sort of went down to being chirping at the ref because something else had happened. But he was heated.
Yeah,
I liked it.
Yeah, it was just funny to watch the way the hands came on the shoulders and kind of pat, you know. So end of the first period, it was 2-1 Habs at this point because Eric Cole had scored a second goal. So into the second period, Alfie, I noticed he looked a little bit more fired up in this period. One of the power plays we got, I think Georges got called weird, really soft, weak boarding call, was it, on Greening or something? They're fighting for the icing and he got called for boarding. I didn't like the call.
That was a pretty weak call.
Anyway, it turned into a terrible power play for the Sens. Carlson ended up getting a high stick penalty halfway through, so it this was the one point in the game where I looked at it and I was one of those fans that was saying, in this case to my TV, shoot, because it was just looking a little bit too predictable. I thought Milan McCulloch looked a little slow this game. So Anderson kept up with his beauty saves. Nothing really good, I didn't think, going for the Sens there. I think Healy at some point was trying to make a reference to Kuba, talking about him not being on the team anymore, but he said Kubina. So he's back at it.
No, but he's crossing over. Now he's copying Bob Cole of all the people to copy.
Who was he referring to? Was it Carlson when he was saying Kubina? Because they're not even the same number. Like Kuba and Kubina were.
I don't know. I think Neil took a shot from behind in one of the corners in this period, headfirst into the boards. No call there at all. And nothing much happening. Still 2-1 Habs at the end of the second period. So bring on the third period. Early in the third, shot from the point, and Benoit scores his first NHL goal. Woohoo! It's a tie game, 2-2. Everybody's cheering. I think even Dean Brown on the radio are still talking about it as being his first goal. And what's the ref doing? He's going to the center ice, and he's waved it off? What? This is one of these whiskey tango foxtrot what moments. Gary Galley even doesn't understand what's going on. And the goal is waved off for goaltender interference because what had happened on the replay, you could see that Carey Price had come out of his crease and he'd bumped into Silverberg. So no goal.
Yeah. Carey Price pushes off outside the blue paint and Silverberg gets the goaltender interference penalty. Unreal.
So, you know, Puddle Duck, you think that was the right call?
Oh, I think it was absolutely the right call.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I mean, Gary and I were talking about it the other day, and, you know, we kind of came to an agreement on, no, it was a brutal call. It was probably I actually am going to have to quote PJ Stock, I think, on this one. Say, that was not a bad call. That was not a horrible call. That was a horrific call. Because basically, not only did you go from, we just tied it, to, yeah, you don't get the goal, and you're now shorthanded.
Yep.
And, I mean, at first, I was, oh, okay, what, he's waving it off? Oh, come on. But, well, maybe he saw something. Maybe I didn't see something. What the heck did he see? Then I see the first replay, and I go, all he did was push off him. He didn't do anything. Why is that getting called back? I'm thinking, that's okay. When the guys confer, when the zebras all gather around the kill like they normally do in the savannah in the normal way to Africa, that kind of stuff. When the zebras gather at the watering hole, they will discuss it and things will be okay. It didn't exactly happen that way because there was no conference. The other three just shut up and nodded and didn't say anything to the one idiot that everybody in the arena could see that isn't what happened. But for some reason, the one lone zebra saw that happen that way, and that was what happened.
Carey Price wasn't even complaining. He was shocked that there was a goalie interference call.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That'd have been weird, wouldn't it? Both Ottawa and Habs players standing there going, hey, wait a minute, you got that wrong, man. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's over the past week, there's been a couple of really, really bad calls, some of them against the Leafs, so I don't mind. But a lot of them, and it's across the whole league, and I don't really get exactly what they're trying to show, but in this case, I have to think that one of those other three refs would have had a better field of view than the one that made the call and would have at least raised the question of, are you sure? And I thought that's what's supposed to happen, especially when you do something as negative as not just taking away your goal, but then setting the team that just scored the goal down one and going from there. I just don't get it. It's a really strange call and a really damaging call to the game, especially a tight game the way it was going at that point.
Yeah,
to have that happen then.
So the Sens never did recover from this. There was plenty of third period left, but quite frankly, the Sens didn't play in a way that they really deserved to win. But this blown call certainly cost him at least a point, as it was proved out to be.
Oh, yeah. Really deflating call, though.
It was.
Really deep. Just takes the wind out of your sails completely.
Especially they're so excited. It was Benoit's first goal, and, you know, it was neat.
Exactly.
One thing I noticed, you know, people talk about arena noise, and Montreal is always one of the heralded franchises for having, you know, loud fans. The Bell Center was dead quiet on the TV. You know, sometimes the TV doesn't get everything across, but I thought that whole game was quiet. And quite frankly, it wasn't until 20 seconds left to go in the game when the Sens goalies pulled, that I finally heard the ole, ole chants. So,
okay, yeah. I'm glad you're mentioning that because I noticed exactly the same thing because normally, you know, it's 0-0. The puck hasn't even been dropped, and you're hearing that. And
exactly.
For a building that's normally incredibly noisy, I wasn't there, but watching it on television, it seemed almost inordinately quiet. But, hey, they managed to get their Olays in at the very end of the game, so good on them, I suppose.
Yep, so 4-point game, Habs take it. They're ahead of the Senators at this point now in the standings, and all people can talk about at this point is the goal that wasn't.
Exactly. I think I have to give Paul McLean credit. In the post-game press conference, he was asked twice with differently phrased questions, but it was essentially the same question. So what did you think about that call? And all he did was look at the – I mean, I've only heard this on the radio, but apparently what he did was he looked at the person who asked the question with a combination of disdain and you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. They were both asked by a Montreal reporter, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, were they? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Just, that wasn't, you know, Dean Brown or anybody like that asking that question. That was a Habs reporter trying to get him to, hey, your owner wants to spend 10 grand, doesn't he?
Yeah. But good on him for just not saying a word.
I wouldn't want to have had that look at me.
Oh, good Lord, no.
Yeah, I saw the video. You're going to see the picture here on the in the Sens Underground post. And, yeah, his eyes were burning.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I think he handled that rather well, considering the circumstances. So, because we realize, you know, what happened last year on that Western road trip when he actually did answer the question, didn't go well. So, definitely the right move to play on this one.
Well, at least all he didn't ask. He was an expert.
Should have done that.
Yeah, that would be good. Oh, no, don't mess with Andy Sutton. He's a big boy. That's a bad idea. All right, that's game 9. Game 10. Game 10 was last night. That's the Slugs at the SNES. I was at this game, so this summary is going to be a little thin as well. But
wait, we were at the SNES. We don't have those jerseys anymore, right?
Sorry, force of habit. I saw a lot of those jerseys last night, and I couldn't get SNES and Mars bars out of my head all night. So it was just
Mars
bars. Exactly. So Slugs at the Senators, game 10, 4-3 win. This was... at times, this game was really well organized, and at times, it looked really quite messy on a number of different fronts. Spezza was out. La Tendresse was out with flu and apparently suffering from a bit of whiplash. Not a concussion. Whiplash. Gonchar took the pregame skate, but he just couldn't play. He's still suffering from after effects for the flu.
I believe that was lashings from McLean's whip.
Okay, that's starting to make a lot more sense. Good one.
Maybe McLean stared at him too.
Well, wouldn't be too surprising. I wouldn't want to ever be on the end of that stare. I bet he's a pretty demanding boss, or you know, coach, whatever you want to call him.
He seems bristly when he looks like that.
Yeah, not a person to be brushed off, because that's just going to make things worse, not better. Yeah. Borowiecki is in, Wierkosz is in, Benoit is in, Da Costa is in, called up from Binghamton, and Dogovins was a scratch. For Buffalo, they started their goon, John Scott, who got a total of just around, I think it was just under 5 minutes of ice time in the entire game. Complete non-factor. But fortunately, their pet weasel, Patrick Coletta, is out with a neck injury, so he wasn't playing. I'm not saying it's fortunate that he has a neck injury, but it's fortunate that he was out.
I'd say that.
I've been watching Patrick Coletta play since he was playing for the Peterborough Petes. I did not like him when he played in the OHL, and I like him even less now that he's in the NHL. I don't like his style of play. I don't like his attitude. I don't like him. He's a weasel. Anyway, first period, beginning of the game, the Senators were buzzing. They spent the good part of the first 4 minutes of the game in the Buffalo end or in the neutral zone going back into the Buffalo end. Early shots on goal were 5-1 for the Senators to start the game. They were playing with some jump. Their passing was pretty good. They just didn't get anything in the net early in the game. But Adam Partey took a holding call, and during that power play, Carlson, power play goal. It was a beautiful shot, too. So Senators are up early, 1-0.
Oh, they can sit back and relax now.
Carlson with assist to Turris and McCulloch.
Hey, Carlson scored, not Phillips. Come on now. If Phillips has scored, that's when you can sit back and go, oh, that's it, we got this.
That's right. So they should have been playing a little bit smarter. And unfortunately, 19 seconds later, Buffalo ties the game.
Oh, imagine that.
19 seconds. kind of sounds like that game that you were talking about there.
19 seconds.
Yeah. Buffalo scores 19 seconds later. It was Tyler Ennis from Stafford and Leopold. So, boom. All the energy out of the building kind of deflates because everyone in that building was going, not again.
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Exactly. You got to be kidding me. Fortunately, later on in the period, Chris Phillips does score.
It's in the bag now.
Phillips from Regan. It was a beauty shot. A little while after that, Alfie scores. And Alfie gets the scores with the assist going to Zibanejad, which I thought was great. The two Swedes was beautiful. I was kind of hoping they'd get another Swede in there, whether it be Carlson or Silverberg. You know, get a whole, you know, both assists were Swedes and Alfie scoring it, but that's okay. So after one period, Senators are up 3-1. They're out shooting the Slugs 10-7. Things are looking good. That was a pretty exciting period. Fairly organized, a little scrambly at times, but not too bad. Second period, oh boy, did things go a little retro for a little while. Senators take a too many men on the ice penalty. And it was weird because I was watching the Buffalo bench right when Ottawa took that too many men on the ice penalty, because it almost seemed like there were only three Buffalo players on the ice. They were having some terrible problems with line changes where, you know, five skaters would come in and then three would go out and then a fourth and then a fifth.
Or too few men.
It was really bad. I was watching, and it happened several times through the game where their line changes for Buffalo were just not working for them at all.
It turns out, I don't think that actually was too many men on the ice for the Senators. There was four people on. What happened, I think the guy jumped off and touched the puck before the person got on the bench, but he was the fourth one. He wasn't the fifth one, so.
Well, I was wondering about it because I was counting going, how is that a too many men penalty? Thank you. I was sitting up in the nosebleed, so it was, you know, and I was on the corner, so it wasn't the best place to be trying to count it all, but it was a little strange. That was a very strange penalty. That all worked out. No worries. No power play goals against us. Regan and Smith did some beautiful work in the corner to get the puck out to Chris Neal. Chris Neal scores 4-1. Beautiful. And then Leopold scores 4-2. It's okay. This is getting a little old. I mean, it wasn't quite as immediate as the last one, but it wasn't
close enough.
Yeah, it wasn't all that long. Shots in the period, 9 apiece. Third period, things started to get a little typical Lindy Ruff. The Buffalo was down by 2 goals, and it started to get a little typical. I don't want to use the word goonery, but that's probably the best way of putting it. Not quite cheap shotting, but we'll just call it goonery for lack of a better term. Zibanejad took a brutal takedown.
it's like a body slam almost.
Well, Tyler Myers is 6'8". He's a big guy. Zibanejad's not tiny, but I've never seen a takedown which kind of looked across between.
I think anybody pretty much looks tiny next to Ennis or Tyler Myers there.
Tyler Myers, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
It looked across between a forearm shiver and a clothesline. But I was impressed that Zibanejad just got up and skated away hard. Like, okay, where's the play? I'm going right back into it. You know, it wasn't even a retaliatory shove or anything like that. Just, nope, not reacting. I'm not letting you suck me into this.
Yeah.
There was another incident later in the period, and unfortunately, it was at the far corner of the ice. I was in one corner. It was in the far corner, so I couldn't see exactly all who the players were involved because there was just this big melee going on. There was a Senator and a Sabre in a corner. Then another Sabre came in. Then another Senator came in. There was a lot of pushing and shoving, but nothing really came out of it. So I don't know whether Scott was involved in that or who, but nothing came out of it. I know this, that Scott was basically not playing. I mean, he played less than 5 minutes. I don't understand why you dress somebody like that, but I suppose we used to do it with McGrattan. So,
did either of you see some of the photos that were out of that John Scott with Nathan Erbe from the Buffalo Sabres? Some of the dressing room pics, the two of them?
No.
Nathan Gerbe, yeah, he's what, 5'3", 5'4"?
Yeah, oh my God, it was hilarious. That Scott on his knees was just slightly shorter than Erbe.
Well, there was one where they were both standing and the caption underneath it was it Take Your Kid to Work Day?
Yeah,
Buffalo Sabres.
That was pretty. It's pretty funny. Dichotomous size, pretty good, pretty funny.
Yeah, I was happy that Coletta wasn't dressed for this game, because if he had been, then I'm pretty sure Lindy Ruff would have been sending him out there to pull his usual cheap crap and then turtling if anybody challenged him on it. So I was happy he wasn't there. Buffalo scored. It was Pominville from their one good line. I didn't really notice Vanek in this game at all. Everyone's saying, oh, he's the hottest. You know, he's got the most points, but he's not really very effective. He doesn't go into corner and digs. I noticed him hanging out at our blue line during a power play. So if the puck was out of the zone, if we had managed to get it out of the zone and down the ice, he would only go out as far as our blue line and just stand there. Wait for the rest of the guys on the ice to do all the work, set the play up, and he would just hang at our blue line waiting for the play to come back down to him. I'm like, wow, I haven't seen a player that lazy since I watched Eric Lindros play in the OHL. Because he used to do the same thing when he was playing for the Generals. It was.
It's always nice to be the one that breaks his point streak, isn't it?
In the last minute, there was some fantastic, almost road hockey-like work by Phillips, and I think it was Benoit
Yeah,
who were was. There was just some. I mean, there were a couple of big saves by Craig Anderson, and everybody was swarming the net, and they made some absolutely heroic saves to preserve the win.
I remember Benoit diving across was pretty good. He really saved one there.
Yeah, and I've been really happy with his play. Absolutely happy with his play. I wasn't sure what had gone on with Silverberg shaking his hand. I thought he might have taken a slash, but it ended up that he took a shot off a knuckle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But his comment was, no, it's the padded part of the glove. I'll be okay. And it's he was stung, talking
clearly.
To reporters. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was talking to the reporters this morning, and he said, no, I'm okay. I mean, it's a little sore, but a little swollen, but it's fine. It's not broken or anything.
And
so,
Don Cherry will be happy because he didn't just shake his hand and go off to the bench. He stayed out for the play and did the best as he could. Actually ended up with the stick again, even though he could only hold it with one hand before going off. So
exactly.
Cherry can make his good Canadian boy comment. Oh, wait, he's Swedish. He was the guy that came in instead of Mark Stone. Never mind.
Yeah, probably won't be talking about that. Post-game, a couple of post-game comments. I saw at least two non-called high sticks on Erik Karlsson, one in the second, one in the third. They were both away from the play, so I don't know if they were shown on TV. But it was actually more like not a butt end, like a butt end of a stick or a hand that was just sort of pushed up into his face and enough to snap his head back, and not a sort of a dramatic diving head back. It was just more of a momentary thing.
Well, Karlsson is a diver.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've already established this. Well, sorry. Was it Peel or Rourke who established that? It was Peel, wasn't it?
Yeah. Peel, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep. I should start calling embellishment on him.
Yeah. Who, on Peel?
Yes.
You're embellishing that call.
Oh, if I could. Oh, if we could. Oh, Lord.
I like that idea. The team is now 49-11-4 when the big rig scores. Always good to know. And that's 8 straight wins when he scores. The last time that we lost, just for reference sake, the last time we lost when Phillips had scored would be March 18th, 2010 against Atlanta. So it's been a while.
He doesn't score often, but when he does, it's in the bag.
It's in the bag. Exactly.
Has that been confirmed that it's free beer at the big rig when the old big rig scores?
Well, I've heard a little bit on this. It started off kind of as a joking, haha, yep, free beer.
And he got 3 goals and everybody went, oh, screw that.
And then now it's, it's only everyone gets a shot, but it's not in the restaurant. It's only if you're at the Wood, so at the actual bar. And even then, now that they, if Pan was here, he'd have the math for what he's on pace for, how many goals. So I'm sure.
It's going to get costly.
Yeah. Boss up, as they say.
Exactly. In the post-game news conference, I just happened to be listening to this when I was driving back into the city. The first person that Paul McLean said that he thought they'd had a good game, Peter Regan. And he actually went on at length, at least a short length, about the fact that he was really, really pleased with Regan's play and the fact that he had been able to contribute on 2 of the goals in the game.
He also contributed on 2 of the goals against, too, but...
But what he did say after that was he's not happy with the first shift after the Senators score.
Yes.
And he went on at greater length about that. And I tried to write this down as I tried to commit the phrase to memory. I can't quote it verbatim, but what he said was he needs to look at who's going to be on the ice for the shift after a Senators score, because who's being used right now isn't working. And I mean, I thought the rule used to be that if you scored, you left that line on the ice. And I know that isn't always the case. But if he's looking at it, I'm sure he's going to be doing the math, man. Maybe you could help out with that as far as who's taking the -1 right afterwards. But I agree that they've got to do something about it, because whether they load up with the most, the 5 most defensive players they can find to play an incredibly defensive shift just to make sure that it doesn't. A scoring opportunity doesn't happen 20 seconds after we've scored, I think it's a good idea.
I think it's something that will disappear as the season goes on. It's just early season mistakes and turning the brains off. We yeah. saw this happen. I think last year it did this too, right? We're complaining the year before, but it didn't continue. So
yeah, and I mean, there was the beginning of the game. The first, I'd say, 30 to 40 minutes were pretty good. But the last 20 were not quite so good. They really, or maybe 25, they really let Buffalo back into this game after they were up 4-1. Just it was mostly sloppy. You know, there were some issues like broken sticks,
yeah,
the usual sort of thing. But
we did not have to complain about all three games was goaltending. Like, we are definitely taking this for granted, aren't we?
Well, yeah. Actually, I disagree. I think we should trade Anderson now. He's obviously washed up.
Yeah, he let more than one goal in.
Well, he let in goals after the first period.
Yeah. See, we should have listened to Don. His stock's going down now.
Yeah.
His worst game was game 10, this last game, for what he allowed for goals against. And that was 3 goals. And we won.
Yeah, but
that's
he let
his
in
worst
three.
Game in the first 10 out of 48. If you'd have told me that at the start of the year, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But hey, you know what? He's making believers out of me and everybody else. So,
well, except for some of the people on the CBC,
really.
Maybe it wasn't CBC. Maybe it was Sportsnet. I remember watching one broadcast. Like, well, you know, he's playing really well, but ..
Oh, geez.
He's a senator.
Yeah.
he's playing no really rhymer. Well.
I'm probably just remembering bits and pieces of Healy, and I'm not remembering it's him because I don't want to.
He's certainly not Ben Scrivens. He's not Jake
Gardner.
Yeah.
By the way, Phillips is on pace for 14 goals in a 48 game season.
And he's nice. Only, I think, isn't his highest season ever 8 in a season?
Probably.
I seem to recall that being mentioned.
So. Yeah. I think he's got that twice, I think, hasn't he? The cup year and another, yeah. Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, he was a points generating defenseman in junior. I know that's a long time ago, but you know, when they drafted him, he was a point generating defenseman. So it's not like he can't do that. It's just not his role. So I'm all for it. I like the way he's playing these days.
And it's good for him. It's nice to see a player of that age contributing, because that in and of itself makes the player more youthful. And I don't mean useful as in U-S-E-F-U-L, as in youthful, Y-O-U-T-H. You know, he makes him younger. Peels years off him, and he feels like he's contributing. And when you get to their age, everything starts to take their toll, and they start to think, gee, do I really want to keep on doing this? Yep. And having success like that just peels away the years, and they play like kids again, and it's great to see. It's awesome to see.
It helps everybody else around them too, the younger guys, because he's there to be in a leadership role too, and it pulls everybody up.
Yep, very much so.
And if it moves him out of being one of the main shutdown pairing into maybe more of a third pairing who do a little bit of everything, it makes him more useful in that role.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Perfect.
Didn't he score 2 goals in his 1,000th game?
Yes. That's right.
I remember that lying on the back on the ice.
That's right.
Fist pump. I remember that.
Well, at the end of the game, they were trying to get him a third. And he was like, no, guys, let's just play the game. Let's just play the game. I don't need the hat trick. Let's win the game. It's more important to win the game.
I'm stuffed, guys. I couldn't eat another bite. I'm just, yeah, you go ahead.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, Spezza had his surgery last Friday, and the reports out of the team were that the surgery was successful. It went well. They're still saying the return is indefinite, but the estimates are still somewhere between 6 and 10 weeks, which would put him back just before the end of the season.
So nice to have him off. We're no longer giving it away. I mean, I told you last episode, I mean, just such a relief, right?
Yeah, I seem to recall where that went last episode. So let's just move on.
I heard it, and I'm not biting on it either. Yeah, I mean, you hear Bob Cole in the one game there going on about, say hello to Jason Spezza, resting up, out of surgery, doing well at his home in Toronto. Kind of like, yes, he's from Toronto. We know. Thank you.
And he's not being traded there. Give it up. I know that they're trying to fill him. I mean, he's not. You don't replace a Jason Spezza. You just sort of fill the gap and soldier on. You're not going to replace him any more than you can replace, you know, a number one goaltender just with whatever you can find lying around. We tried that with Brian Elliott. We know that it didn't work all that well.
Do you think the last couple games, we haven't had him? Do you think a lot of it's been lack of puck possession on our part?
It started off that way.
That's one of the main things that Spezza gives us, right? He has a scoring touch, but he tries to be too fancy at times. But what he is really good and consistently good at is faceoffs and giving us puck possession. And we have some very good puck possession workers on the back end in form of obviously Carlson and Mathot and others like that. But with Spezza out, that's the thing that I think we're missing a little bit. And I think that's the main thing we're missing with Spezza. Everybody talks about the scoring part of it. I mean, yes, Spezza can score, but it's I think a large part of what we're missing is puck possession. If you don't have the puck, it's going where you don't want it to. So I think that's a large part of what we're missing with Spezza, more than the scoring, I think.
Well, and that was something that I noticed yesterday when I was at the game, was that we seem to be, I mean, I'm at the game, so I don't have access to real-time stats. We seem to be winning a lot more faceoffs than we were losing. Now, we were playing Buffalo, who, I mean, overall, they're really not that good a team right now. But
Isn't Buffalo the worst faceoff team in the league? I think they actually might be.
I don't know if they're the worst faceoff team in the league, but I know that the faceoff numbers were pretty good last night. Kyle Turris was 12-3. Zach Smith was 7-5. Peter Regan was 7-5. And Stefan DaCosta was 5-1. That's not bad. So, I mean, all four of the guys who were taking faceoffs had winning ratios.
They're certainly going on a lot about faceoff win percentages the last three games. So,
yeah. And, well, I mean, they were doing pretty well last night, I found. And I think it certainly helped. I mean, if you win the faceoff, you have possession, or at least briefly, you have it. And it made a difference because I found that watching the game, we did have possession a lot of the time. I don't know if they have a puck possession stat. That would be actually an interesting one to look up. But it was it was pretty good.
One of the things I noticed with the Habs is that the Habs are very good at passing. So once they get puck possession, they don't give it up very easily. So whether it's an interception or whether it's a power play or whatever it is, the Habs are pretty good at once they get it, they don't let it go. So when you play teams like that, sometimes that's when you miss having that number one center who's very good on the faceoff because your percentage is slightly down from having the puck, and then it just gets a little worse from there. But it's good that all of the people that we have depth at center, which is good. I mean, we didn't have that a couple years ago. And I know Turris is doing the best he can. I mean, he's kind of got the mantle thrust upon him, and he's just going to have to step up and see if he can do it. But he seems like a kid that has the energy to do it and to try and at least give it his best shot. And so far, they're not looking too bad.
No. I mean, there are some players who step into the number one center role at age – how old is Turris now? 23? I think
22.
I mean, you look at someone like a Malkin or a Crosby, and they can step up and be a number one center pretty much right away. But that's the absolute cream, top echelon player in the league.
You can't pick Pittsburgh for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, look around the rest of the league and see how many of their number one centers were the number one center and very successful at it at age 23. I mean, even Spezza wasn't as good as he is at it now. 3 or 4 years ago, he was good, but not as good as he is now. So yeah. You grow into that role for certain players. So I'm okay with, I think Turris is doing pretty well considering his age and time in the league and everything else. He's not a Spezza, but he's doing the best that he can, and he's been pretty successful at it overall so far. So I'm hoping that it continues. I'm all for continuing him in that role, and the rest of the lines can work out as they can.
I know Zibad was being tapped as being rather soft coming into this year, and there was some rumblings about injury and stuff like that, and you can't really hold that against the kid. Injuries happen, but when they start to add the soft player stuff into it, and then you see what his Twitter account has with kittens and puppies and his girlfriend and everything else, you start to go, oh, God, this guy's going down the chute. But seriously, the kid looks really good out there, and he's, like you said, he's not the biggest, but he's got energy and he's got grit and he plays well. So far I'm actually really impressed with him.
Yeah. He's also 19. He's still only 19. So, I mean, the people are looking at, well, you know, Couturier was drafted after him, and he's already playing in the league. He's already putting up points. Okay, so he's not Sean Couturier. Have you watched Sean Couturier play defense? No, because he doesn't. So, you know, he may be putting up points,
What could the Flyers use right now? Defense.
Exactly my point. Thank you. You know, for everything that you see that he's doing well, look at what the other side of that coin is. And I'm okay. I'm really happy that Zibanejad has been down in Binghamton. And, I mean, he's learning from Luke Richardson, who is a very good defenseman, and he was a very good assistant coach here. And he's doing really well in Binghamton, especially considering how many players Binghamton is now missing, either to injury or up in Ottawa. And it's a great learning environment. It's hard work. It's not as glamorous as the NHL, but it's a great place to learn. And it's really falling into the Red Wings way of doing things, which is go play in the minors for a couple of years. You'll learn. You may not make as much money. It won't be as much fun, but you'll learn, and it'll turn you into a better hockey player. So if he stays down there, I'm okay with that. Because if you look at who's been playing for Ottawa this year, look at the three defensemen that we have playing right now who were playing for Bingo up until the NHL season started. I don't think they would be nearly as far along if they hadn't been down there. So,
and also having them up in pairs, like having Benoit and Weirkoch, is it kind of working together?
Yeah.
Having them play together. I mean, like, these guys already have a familiarity. They make a good D pairing because to them it's just whether I'm in Binghamton or whether I'm in Ottawa. I mean, pretty much we know what our job is, right?
Exactly. And they've played very well. In the games that I've been watching them in, I've been completely fine with the way they've been playing. No issues at all. No issues at all.
One of the things I like about Borowiecki is, in particular, is that he is tough, but he seems very unflappable. I've seen other players, because he's known for being a tough little bugger, people hitting him, and he's not biting. He just looks at them like, okay, just whatever. Like, you know, you think the young tough guy coming up from the minors to play with the major, with the NHL team, is going to be looking to make a name for himself. He's tough, and like you said, he hits hard, but he's not biting when they try to rattle his cage and say, hey, let's see if we can go 2 minutes out of this kid. And he seems to be very unflappable in that, which is good.
Yeah. He's got a long fuse, which is the opposite of what he had at the beginning of the season in Binghamton. He had a really short fuse down there. He was dropping the gloves and pounding on people constantly. But it's almost like bringing him up has lengthened his fuse. And people will hit him hard, and he'll get up exactly like you said. He'll look, get up and look at them and go, yeah, not so much, but I'll remember you. Because the next time you're in my corner, I'm going to smear you. And he does. Because he hits his own teammates hard in practice.
I hurt my friends. What do you think I'm going to do to you?
Well, I went to a couple of the open practices before the season started. And at one point, I was right down against the glass. And he threw just a board rattler. I don't remember who it was against. But it was just sort of a holy crap. I wasn't expecting that. And it was just, you know, okay, I guess what I've been reading is exactly the truth, is he does throw them hard, even in practice. But he's not stupid about it. He may play hard, but he's not stupid. And I love it.
Did the Zamboni run into the gate? What happened?
He's going to become a fan favorite for sure.
Oh, I think so.
What's really interesting, and it hit the news today, is that Lundin's ready to come back, right?
Yep.
So Borowiecki might be the odd defenseman out who may even get sent down for a little while.
I would imagine he would be, because he needs to keep playing. Because, yeah. I mean, if Lundin comes back, then also Gonchar may be back from the flu.
Yeah.
So suddenly it's, if Borowiecki is sent down, it's one of Weirkosh or Benoit who's playing. And the other one is sort of the seventh defenseman. I think they'll probably keep both of them and carry seven, send Borowiecki back down.
So does anybody really have a finger on what is going on with Lundin? Is he offensive, defensive? Is he from everything I've heard about him, is I think all of us were all going, who? We basically don't know a bloody thing about him.
He's steady. He's not particularly, from what I've gathered, he's not particularly offensive. But he's not a stay-at-home bruiser. He's just a steady, you know, dependable blue liner. Nothing fancy, nothing particularly flashy, but not a liability in your own zone. doesn't put people through the glass, but not necessarily, but not soft. Just not, he's not Anton Volchenkov, but he's not Joe Corvo.
Boy, you're really selling him here, aren't you?
So long as he's not Gilroy 2.0, I don't care.
No,
sounding a little bit like that. But.
No, he's not a defensive liability. He's not soft. He's just not, he's not Mathot, or he's not Volchenkov. He's steady.
Nice pun, by the way, Puddle Duck, for saying if anyone else has a finger on who this guy is. That was his injury, right? Broken finger?
Yeah, broken finger. I see, I was letting that one go. But thank you for bringing that one back. That's great. That's great. I think we'll see. Because he's been cleared to play, I don't know whether we'll see him it's against Carolina or not, but I presume they'll want to get him in a game fairly soon. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Borowiecki sent back down to Binghamton, because they could certainly use him. Binghamton signed Brent Lebda, former Red Wing, former Maple Leaf, to a professional tryout just because they're so short of bodies. I think they couldn't get anybody else from Elmira. So they're like, okay, come on, we got to sign somebody here. I think they're suffering from injury problems. I don't know if they have any injury problems on the blue line. I haven't seen anything recent.
There's a great name to have to call as the announcer. Lebda.
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 Borowiecki, yeah. Lebda, and Zibanejad all on the same line, and Bob Cole has an aneurysm and hits.
You got to put Silverberg in there as well. Have some more fun.
Smith, get Smith out there.
Well, that's what Joe Bowen pulled last year, Mr. Toronto Homer, Leafs TV guy.
When Zibanejad, yeah.
No, he said, why can't he just call himself Smith? It would be easier to say. And I was like, you are such a tool.
Let's not forget the normal ethnicity dynamic of Toronto and how many people you just offended in a short line in that.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey is a multiracial sport, so there's a lot of folks that for whom Zibanejad isn't that odd of a name to have them kind of look at that guy and go, uh-huh. I mean, good Lord, you got Kadri, for God's sakes, and everybody else, so no real place for that. So,
yeah, well, Kadri's a Leaf. It's okay. And it's only two syllables, so we can figure that one out. Don't want long lines. Just the last little thing on the Senators. I thought this was I know we don't have Pan this week, so I had to throw a little bit of math in. I know you have a math thing coming up, so we'll get to that in just a second. But one cute little stat that I heard today is what Senator has the most goals at Scotiabank Place so far this year? With three, by the way. And the answer to this was not a name I was expecting. It's Jim O'Brien. He has the most goals at home.
Jim O'Brien. Sounds like a boy who'd like some nice home cooking.
Former first-round draft pick who's really rounded into shape rounded into a good hockey player after a couple of years of, I don't want to say disappointment, but not living up to the expectation of being a first-round draft pick, even if he was a fairly late one. Well on the fourth line. I mean, there are a couple of players who've been a bit of a disappointment, like Latendresse just seems to be playing with some rust. But all the guys who have come up from Binghamton over the past season or even just into this season, they're all playing really well. Yeah.
O'Brien especially has had a real nose for the net.
Yeah, he has. I'm letting that go. Now, before we get into talking about the rest of the league, you had some math you wanted to talk about. So let's throw that in here.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do my best. I mean, I am 1/8 Mandarin on my mother's side, but I'm going to see if I can do this correctly. I'm going to try it again.
Slight tech.
Is normally bad thing, but with a spreadsheet we can do anything.
Okay, so let me get my math up front. So I am not a math whiz. I am not Pan, but I do think that the current version of the call-ups that we have talking here tonight has increased one stat for us here. And that is that with Cardinals' average height of about 6'3", and Canucks at about 6 foot, and Pan at about 5'5", and me at about 6'1". The way you average it all out, we look at about 179.49 centimeters for the call-ups as they normally go. But with me involved and Pan out of the mix, we actually go to about 186.27 centimeters. So that's a net gain of 6.78 centimeters, or about 2 inches, 5/8 on the overall average height for the podcast. And that concludes our section of math.
Oh, that was scintillating. Outstanding. I'm happy to be a part of that.
The second part of it will be the taxes. Now, if you'd look to call up.
Oh, that'll get you snappy.
Yep.
Start talking taxes. Anything else you want to talk about the Senators? I'm done. I didn't have anything else to talk about with the Sens. I think that the two losses, they're unfortunate, but I'm hoping that the win against Buffalo can be translated into some momentum going into this weekend, because they've got some interesting games coming up against the Hurricanes and the Jets, and then the Sabres are back in next Tuesday. I think the way the schedule breaks down is every Tuesday the Sabres and the Sens play. I don't know if that's the way it's going to turn out or not, but it's kind of looking like that way right now. Moving away from the Sens to talking about stuff going on around the league, there's actually something that happened just as we happen to be recording, which I thought would be interesting to bring up, because it's the first interesting, truly interesting trade, well, second, of the season. The first one was Mike Rupp being traded to Minnesota. I thought that was a fairly balanced trade, but the one that happened just now is that Anaheim has acquired defenseman Ben Lovejoy from Pittsburgh, who for a fifth-round pick in 2014. So a fifth-round pick in next year's draft for a defenseman who's playing in the NHL right now. I know he's a bottom-pairing defenseman. He's making league minimum. But I thought that was an interesting trade that he's going for. I mean, he's a UFA at the end of the season, but he's traded for a fifth-round pick next year.
Out of the conference, too.
I would have thought he'd be worth a little bit more than that. I don't know about you guys. I've seen him play a couple of times. Doesn't look that out of place.
Well, he's out west, right? I mean, who needs defense?
Everybody.
Well, yeah, true. But a lot of the teams in the east need it, right?
Yeah.
So send them away from them. So, you know, I mean, they could have got something. I mean, I highly doubt Penguins are going to send Lovejoy to Philly. But, you know.
I just thought that the price was a little low.
Trade just came in now. Philly trades their fifth round pick for Lovejoy.
wait. Breaking. Confirmed.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, the Southeast division is getting interesting for me. I'm really not sure how Florida managed to win that division last year, considering how they're playing this year. And really, their team hasn't changed all that much. It's changed a little.
Kovalev.
Oh, well, yeah, he would make any team worse. But Washington is just brutal. And
nobody picked that.
Yeah,
no. I had a fairly strong start last year, fairly strong finish last year on the back of that young kid that was playing goal for them, right?
Holtby,
and he started off this year for him now. Holtby, that it? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, I mean, I obviously people are always quick to blame the coach, and I don't think you can look at it as being Adam Oates instead of Dale Hunter as being the problem there. I think that team is loaded with problems.
It's not Salmon anymore.
It's not Salmon. He's gone. There have been a lot of question marks about Ovechkin and his declining performance over the past couple of years, and the fact that he still kind of plays just the way he wants to rather than trying to fit into the system. And, I mean, Oates is trying to implement a different system, and when that happens, teams struggle. But I'm just astonished.
Chris Phillips has more goals than Ovechkin.
Yeah. Well, I had fun. Speaking of, I had fun last night. There was some Spot the Idiot. I was up in the 300s at Scotiabank Plates, and there was some Spot the Idiot walking around the concourse at the top, proclaiming that Leafs rule and no, the Senators suck. And he was wearing a Kessel jersey, and he was walking towards me. And I waited till he got close to me, and I said, "How does it feel to have your hero have fewer goals than Chris Phillips and Chris Neal?" And everybody around me, most of whom were Senators fans, started to laugh. And he just kind of shut up and walked away. It was an enjoyable moment, I have to say. I really have to say. Nothing quite like taking somebody down a peg or two when they have... I mean, I would have kept the, you know, you're still paying Darcy Tucker. I would have kept that card for a second shot if I needed one, right. But I didn't.
And Leaf you guys fan. Have 12 sports lanes fun. In your city. We only have 6.
That's right.
We don't need those extra 6.
There was a happening in the game last night that I wanted to ask you guys about and see if you knew about this. I didn't know about this rule. I think it was in the third period that at one point the play was down into the Ottawa end and the Ottawa net came off. But right as it came off, the play started going back the other way and the whistle wasn't blown.
That's the way it's supposed to be called, I think.
Yeah, I didn't know this. This was a change last year or was that this year? One of those speed up the game things. If the play is going the other way, then the whistle isn't blown and it continues and the net is just reset.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm of a mind that I don't think the refs figured out that the season started yet. I don't know what the hell they're watching, but Touché. they're not watching what we're watching. And I think most fans are kind of just like, I can picture some of them with the rule book spread out on their lap going, no, but that's not interference. You know, it's just, I don't know. They're just on a different plane this year.
Two minutes for checking.
Yes. I mean, half the time when the whistle goes, you see all the players turning around like, okay, what was it now? They're just all confused. And you know what? When they're confused, they don't know how to play because they don't, especially the guys that are kind of on the edge, as it were. It's just they're just like, okay, I can play on the edge, but please to God in heaven, tell me where the edge is because I have no idea.
Exactly. Well, if the listener can clear that one up for me, I'd appreciate it when it was implemented and what the rules are and how far. Now, I'm kind of curious as to how far does the puck have to go in the other direction? Like, what if it was intercepted right at the blue line, started coming back in before the net was reset? Would that mean that the whistle would get blown?
He blew it as soon as Buffalo got possession of the puck. So,
no, the play continued all the way down into the other end.
Yeah, but Ottawa had possession the whole time. That's why they didn't blow it.
Okay. All right.
Ottawa was pressing. They had a good offensive chance on it. And actually, it actually was a little bit of a turnover or like an intercepted pass when Buffalo got the puck back and they blew it dead. So it's kind of nice that it got blown dead too. So
okay. All right. Well, thank you.
It was like a delayed penalty kind of situation. That kind of
turn around. There's Anderson with the drill, cleaning out the hole, making sure the net's back. Tool belt on.
Yeah, he was changing the glass behind the net earlier in the game. So you know, he really does get in with
they make me do everything.
Yeah, the ground crew. He's really in with the boys there. It's kind of nice.
You guys pass me a knife? No. We'll take it.
Yeah, don't you give the box cutter.
They sell pre-chopped chicken there, buddy. You're not buying nothing.
It's already breaded. Don't worry about it. The ongoing saga with Vancouver and their goalies. I have to admit, I'm still sitting back. I mean, there's not a week so far in this young season that I don't get a giggle out of something that's going on there. I mean, all the, oh, well, we're going to get a top six player and we're going to get a first round pick for Luongo. I mean, quite frankly, Vancouver fans are just delusional about what they're going to get back. But now that, you know, Luongo's playing better than Schneider and it's really become a bit of a goalie controversy, and I'm really happy that another team is having that instead of us. Schneider's agent jumped into it today. Or yesterday, sorry, saying, well, you know, Corey's not getting enough ice time and we're just worried about his development because it was understood that this was going to be going on and he signed his contract in good faith and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just... Exactly. Shut the hell up. Agents should never be in the news. Never. Sorry, Alan Walsh. I know you've already blocked us. But agents should never be in the news. They're becoming like press people for movie stars. It's ridiculous.
Don't block him, Alan. Don't block him.
I thought it was pathetic. And I mean, quite frankly, if Schneider is really worried about that sort of thing, then maybe Schneider needs to get traded. Because Luongo has a no trade clause, so maybe Schneider needs to get traded. Does Columbus need a goalie? They do, actually.
Dan was right. They are the Leafs West, aren't they? They can put on a good drama like nobody else.
Oh, it's just It's just silly. And I mean, I'm laughing about it, but I'm laughing at them. I'm not laughing with them.
No, I'm laughing at them too. That's right.
I'm laughing at them.
With the talent that team has, I mean, those Sedins are incredible. But with the talent they have, it's affected all of them. Like, I don't think there's any of them that are on the ball. I know Kessler's not there, and he tends to be kind of the heartbeat of how they go on a lot of things. But some of the talent they've got there, and Daniel Henrik and some of the others, they're just not performing. They just, like, they don't know whether to poop or go sailing, really. They just are just, with the whole thing kind of up in the air, it's like the whole team's just topsy-turvy.
That's a distraction.
They're only 3 points up on not being, I mean, it's early in the season, but Vancouver is on the top of a division that, not all that good to begin with, but they're not playing all that great. So, not horribly, but for a team that's supposed to be, you know, the top of everything, they're definitely not playing that way.
The ones that are making me really, really laugh are some of the ones, you know, if you're in sports and you're in sports media, you got nailed in the first bit when the season started. Who do you think is going to take the cup in this short season? And a couple of them I know spoke for Vancouver, and another fellow spoke for Washington. I just wonder what those poor guys have to put up with at work every single day when they walk in. Kind of like, don't talk to me.
Yeah, throw Philadelphia in that mix too, because there were other people talking about Philly.
This is the Leafs' year. We got Jean-Claude Van Damme. It's going to be all good.
Never dull. Never dull. Well, let's move into email. We got a couple of emails this week. We still like to hear them. We still like to get them, folks. So feel free to send them in. There was a question in the forums today about where to send them and you know when to send them, about when we record, generally speaking. It's going to be Wednesdays unless there's a game or unless there's something interfering. So if you want to send something timely, Tuesday or Wednesday during the day would be the perfect time. But you can send it anytime. You're allowed to send a rant after a game or something that happens that really you're thinking about it or you're really annoyed about something. Go ahead and send it, and we love getting them because it gives us lots of interesting stuff to talk about and come up with things that we haven't previously thought of. So. Send it in.
For Cardinal, press 1. For Canuck, press 2. For Pan, press 3. For General Referee Rants, press 4.
Please stay on the line. Your call's important to us.
The average wait time is 7 minutes. Yeah, we don't have an IVR. We don't have a rant line, at least not yet. So it has to be done via email. But you can rant via email. Hey, I'm all for that.
Hey, record yourself and send it. That's fine.
We could play that.
Sure.
I think the referees sucked in that game. Whatever happened to all of them? Why has this happened to our senators? Daniel Alfredson was excellent in this game. Yeah.
Oh, we're going to get Mac Bitch to read it. Okay. No, but if you record yourself reading an email, then we don't have and send it to us, or you know, record your rant and send it to us, then you don't have to listen to us read it. So you can get it phrased exactly as you want. So that could be that would probably be an improvement on the way that we read email. We're almost as bad as Don Brennan. Sorry, that's only good for people in Ottawa who listen to the Team 1200. Don Brennan from The Sun was filling in last week, and it became a comedy sketch of him trying to read people's email. Anywho.
Isn't he the one that also wants to trade Anderson?
Yeah, that's where the comedy just gets gold, doesn't it?
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Apparently, Peter Regan got his first goal, according to the Ottawa Sun, last night. But
Didn't he get two assists?
He got two assists.
Maybe that was his goal, to get two assists. I don't know. But.
Oh, maybe. Not exactly the highest brow journalism or readership in the Sun. So there you are. Anyway, on to email. This one is from Cal. There's no subject line, so I'll just get right into it. Hey, boys. First of all, you guys are great to listen to. I haven't missed a single podcast since you started this past summer. After the retirement of the Sens Underground, I was like, that sucks. What am I going to listen to now? But you guys have filled that void. Oh, thank you. It's always nice to get compliments, and compliments will guarantee that your email gets read. Latendresse, simply, he freaking sucks ass. I do not know why we signed him. I had that feeling as soon as I heard that we had signed him last summer. Oh, well, at least it's only for 1 year. As for Mark Mathot, I have not seen him play before he came to Ottawa, so I did not know anything about him. But, man, he's good. He's a better partner for Carlson than Kuba, for sure. Even though Carlson can make anyone that plays with him look good on the ice. I really hope Spezza comes back sooner rather than later. We're really missing him. Sens play the Sabres tonight. I'm calling for a 2-1 win. Of course, the Slugs' goal will come in the first period, as usual. Go, Sens, go. Thanks, guys. Cal. Well, this did win. Your estimate was a little off, but they managed to win, and I agree on Mathot. I've been completely impressed with him since he got here. He's played. Go ahead.
You know, one thing that's also with Mathot is that he's really good social media-wise. He's really good at interacting with the fans.
Yeah.
When I met him, he was very personable, friendly to everybody I saw talking to him. You know, he seems to be a genuinely nice guy, and that seems to kind of, and you know, that's the kind of ambassador you want for your team, really.
Yeah, good local boy, that one. He's really, really fitting in very well. And he just seems really comfortable. And I've also noticed in watching him play, he's not afraid of either making the first pass out himself. Like if he sees Carlson just take off, he'll either make the pass to Carlson or he'll make it to somebody else who's then going to pass to Carlson.
Or join him on the rush.
Or join him on the rush because he's not a small guy. He's a big guy, but he can skate. He's not a big sort of lumbering, stay-at-home defenseman kind of guy. He's big. He's tough.
But he ain't no Kuba. My God.
Not at all. Not at all. Latondres, I've stated this before. I think he's rusty, and I think he's just out of sync because he hasn't played much in the past couple of years. I'm willing to cut him a little more slack to see how it works out. I don't want to cut bait on him just yet. I think there's certainly some potential there, but it's going to take some time. Excuse me. And if he's in and out of the lineup for a little while because other people are around or whatever, I'm okay with that. If he becomes the extra body and, you know, just has to work on it in practice, okay. I don't think reclamation products or projects deserve top 6 minutes right away. And, you know, maybe put him down on the third or fourth line because he does throw his weight around, not a lot, but he certainly did when he was playing against Montreal. And if he can learn to do that some more, as well as working on his shooting skills, I'm okay on seeing him down in that role for a little while too. I'm not ready to throw him on the scrap heap just yet.
Yeah. Can you send him down? Like, is he able to go down to Binghamton?
He would have to clear waivers. He's on a one-way contract.
Oh, yeah. He gets snapped up in a heartbeat, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
You know what? His hawking sense hasn't completely deserted him.
No.
I mean, I think we were all you guys were commenting last show, I think, about a good play he did where he actually helped the offensive play by jumping onto the boards and taking himself off the ice so that he didn't break up the play. I mean, it's there. It's just some of his awareness is there. It's just his offensive skills really aren't there. I mean, this guy was, what, a 25-goal scorer a couple times or something?
Exactly. He's got potential, and I don't want to write him off just yet. I know some people are like, no. But I tend to take the longer view of people, not the, okay, he's played badly for two games or three games or whatever. I'd rather give them a little bit of a longer leash.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm.
Okay. This is going to be fun. Canuck, you're up.
Yeah, we got an email just today from Senior. Hi, Senior here. First-time emailer, long-time complainer. Russell's busy doing house cleaning tonight, so he asked me to propose this on his behalf. As someone suggested in the game forum last night, Ottawa needs a goal scorer to replace Spezza if we expect to make a serious run in the playoffs. There are not a lot of goal scorers available out there at a reasonable cost. One of the few places the Sens have depth in is nets. And while there are a couple teams that are desperately looking for a goalie, only one I can think of have a proven goal scorer they might be willing to trade, and that's the Laughs. As much as most of us hate Phil Kessel, he is a proven 30 goals a year player. My first thought was that the Blue Slim would go for Kessel for a Robin Lehner swap. Then I realized that while Lehner would be a real smart pickup for Toronto, he's just not big enough name. Name is more important than talent in Laughsville. So I thought maybe a three-way swap. Lehner to Vancouver, Luongo to Toronto, and Kessel to Ottawa. Vancouver gets rid of Luongo and his contract and gets a real good backup goalie. Toronto has the guy they really want, and someone the Toronto press can crucify and drive out of town, that being Luongo. Yep. And Ottawa gets a goal scorer in Kessel. I know that one or two people may disagree with this, but wouldn't it be reasonable if the laughs weren't involved? And congratulations to Wade Redden on playing his 1,000th game last night. Love your podcast. Keep up the good work. Well, thanks for that. Kessel to Ottawa. Well, how would McLean answer this?
That sounds a bit like the stink eye that Paul McLean was giving the reporter the other night. Is that what you're trying to convey via audio?
One or two people may disagree with this.
I would disagree, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that Kessel plays for the Leafs.
Senior didn't send that. That's Stooley. He hacked into senior's email and sent that. He had to have. It's one of those things where he just says something and just waits for Shredder's head to blow off. So it's a nice try there, Tattoo Boy. We're not following for it. Not happening.
I don't want Kessel on this team, and it has nothing to do with the fact that he plays for Toronto. It has to do with the fact that he was playing for Boston. He was a 30-goal scorer for Boston, and Boston was willing to let him go. They were happy to let him go. The fact that they got back two first-round draft picks that turned into Sega and Hamilton, icing on the cake. But Boston was quite happy to let him go. And now in Toronto, he's struggling, no goals in 10 games, and the rumor is that Toronto is willing to let him go. Now, if two teams are willing to get rid of a 30-goal scorer, why? What's the problem?
Danny Heatley.
Well, that was the rumor when he left Boston. And if that's the case, I'm not interested in having somebody come in like that. But more importantly, I am not willing to give up the future of goaltending on this team to try and replace a first-line center for this season. I know we need wingers to go with Spezza moving forward. We need them for not just this year, but for years to come. We have a lot of young talent. This team is young talent with some older players like Spezza, like Phillips, Alfie, if he comes back next year. I understand that, but I do not want to give up the future of goaltending for this team. I mean, Anderson is right now. Leonard is the future. I'm not willing to give up the future for a right now that is not a Stanley Cup contending team.
We lucked into Bishop, really. He came available, Murray made a good play for him and got him. But we have a lot of development rolled up in Leonard. And that doesn't mean you can't view him as an asset. He's a tradable asset, just like any player is. But I really think we need to be focusing on Leonard doing what he does best in Bingo, keeping Andy going in Ottawa, and Bishop is the bait. And I don't, when people keep changing that up and trying to trade it away, it's kind of like, you know what? We waited this long to have good goalies in Ottawa. I don't really want to get rid of them that fast. Sorry. And I sure as heck don't want to give them to Vancouver because, good Lord.
Yeah, I don't want him going to Vancouver. I don't want to go into Vancouver either. Canuck, after your quiet stare, would you like to add anything to that?
You can almost hear his mustache bristling against the microphone.
I can feel the cold, icy stare of Paul McLean looking at me going, are you blank kidding me? I'm self-censoring. You don't have to do it.
But, you know, I do agree fully with on a separate tack. Congratulations, full congratulations to Wade Redden on playing his 1,000th game. And 1,000th NHL game, because he waited a long time to have that, and I really do wish nothing but good things for that guy. I mean, if he's faced his demons and got his life on track, then great.
Yeah, and he's playing quite well. He's got more goals than Phil Kessel. So I think you know, well done for Wade Redden. I think we've talked enough about Senior's idea. Senior, it's an interesting thought. Russell, it's an interesting thought, but you'll have to come back with another email next week to defend the position a bit more if you really want to make that trade. Because I don't know about the rest of the Groundhogs. Groundhogs, feel free to email about this. I'm not warm on the situation at all. I don't think that's a sensible move to make. Quickly, the upcoming week, we have tomorrow, Thursday, February 7th, the Hurricanes are in town for a rematch from last week. Hopefully, the Senators will play better against them. Saturday, it's hockey day in Canada, so there's a 2 p.m. game on Saturday. The Jets are in town. Next Tuesday, the Sabres, and next Wednesday, the Senators are at the Penguins. So lots of games coming up. Another 3 games at home, and then on the road in Pittsburgh. That about wraps things up. Puddleduck, anything you wanted to say before we call it an evening?
No, I just wanted to really thank you guys for having me on. It's great to chat with you. It's always good to chat with fellow Sens fans, but the only regret I have is that I didn't get to trade math notes with Pan. I mean, we'll have to hold that for another time.
Indeed we shall. Thank you very much for filling in for us. We certainly appreciate it. And for bringing your own thoughts to this podcast. It's certainly given us a different dimension. Folks, just as we're on our way out, don't forget to email us at podcast@sendscallups.com. Visit the forums, join the conversations and game threads at sendsunderground.com. You can follow us as well as interact with us on Twitter @SensCallups. And don't forget, we're still looking for more content for the Sens Underground Network. Don't be afraid of this. Even if it's a one-off, just come up with a podcast, make it happen. Everybody wants to listen to more. We can't get enough content these days.
Yeah. Any final comments there, Canuck?
Castle?
Finally broke it out of him.
Enough.
Are you kidding me?
No. That was too high pitched. You got to start low and then work your way up.
Oh, I think he's just a little too worked up. We'll talk about that one again next week. For now, on behalf of all of the Sens call-ups, both the regulars and the fill-ins for tonight, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Ciao!
See ya.
Kessel.
Kessel! You remember forums when the underground was still going? The guys would go on and go, Kessel, and it was basically Kessel was substituted for wherever you did it. It's like, oh, I just Kesseled myself.
Aw, oh, come on!
When I saw you come out in your black and white jersey, the very symbol of fairness and impartiality, told myself that you'd keep it fair, but then I started to really swear when I heard your whistle go off over nothing. Hockey fans are used to a certain level of unfairness. Especially having referees at work like these. Why you calling this penalty on me? When the last guy got away scot-free. I still don't understand why you're calling me over. You didn't have to send me off. Make it like I broke a rule and deserve 2 minutes. And I don't understand this call. Treat me like a diver and the field's so low. Ref, I know a doctor too. To fix that little problem with the eyes affecting you. I just don't think you're on the ball. Face it, ref, you just totally blew that call. Face it, ref, you just totally blew the call. Face it, ref, you just totally blew that call. Now and then I think of all the times you've screwed me over. But had me believing it was always something that I'd done. Ref, I don't play that way. And I don't care what you say. Why'd you let the other stuff go? But now you're gonna play the heavy end and make me go. You didn't have to send me off. Make out like I broke a rule and deserve 2 minutes. And I don't understand this call. Treat me like a diver and that feels so low. Ref, you must be pregnant though. Cause you missed almost 2 whole periods so far. I just don't think you're on the ball. Face it, ref, you just totally blew that call. Face it, ref, you just totally blew that call. Face it, ref, you just totally blew that call.